The White Noise Show with Sarah and Christina. Hello and welcome to The White Noise Show with Sarah and Christina. On today's show...
Is that cue me?
Yes.
Okay, on today's show, hello everyone, we are talking about being mothers, seeing as how... I'm quite topical, Sarah. Seeing as how it's Mother's Day, we thought we'd talk about mother stuff. We'll be doing our live Twitter feed, so every time somebody tweets albino, I will be going back to the Twitter and letting everybody know the exciting stuff that people are saying about us. Is that exciting? Are you excited about that?
That is exciting. I'm most excited to see how many ones you nearly read out but can't quite because they're obscene.
Yeah, well, we'll be coming back to obscene messages. We did get sent an obscene message, which I will read out, yes, but...
I'm a little bit excited about that.
I do like an obscene message, I do. So, I need to say, before we start, I need to do a few shout-outs to people. We've been getting very, very, very many emails from people who are getting in touch with us. Now, one of them, in two shows ago, Sarah, I'm sure you will remember when you did the Nystagmus challenge. Do you remember?
Indeed,
successful challenge that rendered you absolutely useless.
Absolutely.
I asked the question, why can you not see your nystagmus in the mirror?
Okay.
Adrian Parker has got in touch and said, I think the reason you can't see nystagmus in the mirror is because your brain takes snapshots of the world when your eyes are at the end of the swing for a very short period. They stop moving. As we're not seeing the world all the time continuously, we miss the movement.
Oh, my life. That's very technical.
That sounds quite technical.
It's impressive. Thank you, Adrian.
It does sound good. Thank you for getting in touch with me because my science and reasoning would not, I wouldn't be able to manage that myself. So probably sounds right to me. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, no, it sounds right to me. Yeah, I'm going to go with it.
Sounds good. And we've also had lovely messages from Beth, Rich, David, Rebecca, David, Lorna, Joe, Rachel, Jan, Ollie, Louise and Kate. And Kate asks, do we sing the theme tune? Do we sing the theme tune?
No, we don't, because if Christina was singing the theme tune, no one would listen to the programme.
To be fair, though, that theme tune is quite horrific.
It's quite tuneless.
And actually, I think...
Kate doesn't actually have a great opinion of our singing in the first place.
No,
Kate. I'm like a nightingale.
She's got the voice of an angel, that's Sarah.
Yes, angel, bring tears to the eyes of Granny.
Eyes of the blind.
Eyes of the blind, that's me.
And Lorna also mentioned her party trick. So people have been doing my, last show, I asked people to fill in a questionnaire, which we will be going to in the next show. But this week we're concentrating on doing our Mother's Day special. But a lot of people have been doing the questionnaire. And Lorna mentioned, I thought it was quite funny, her party trick is spin round 3 times and watch your eyes go crazy. Apparently it's great fun.
I'm going to try that later.
Yeah, I can't. I think I might. I'd struggle with spinning around anyway. So the idea of it is kind of making me feel sick anyway.
Yeah. No, I can see that too. I think we should just give it a go. Give it a whirl.
Give it a whirl. Very good. A whirl 3 times. So if you want to take part in my questionnaire, you can find it at thewhitenoiseshow.com or you can find it on Twitter at whitenoiseshow. Or you can email thewhitenoiseshow@gmail.com. I'll also want to plug, we've been doing a feature, Sarah. Do you remember the Bluffington Post?
Indeed, the Bluffington Post, yeah.
Which we will be returning to next week because a lot of people have been telling me about their very good bluffs, which I'm quite impressed by. I've also, off the back of that, set up a blog called thebluffingtonpost.blogspot.com. So if you want to hear about my bluffs, which I've probably talked about and you're probably bored with already, go to thebluffingtonpost.blogspot.com. So Sarah.
Yes, Christina.
And everybody else listening, how would you like this for an offensive message?
Okay. Love a good offensive message.
Right, what do you think about this? I may be ginger, but we all hate albinos, right?
That's awesome. So did this come in like as an email response to the podcast or to the Twitter account? Or
this came in via Twitter.
Via Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was thinking about giving the Twitter handle, the Twitter name, but I thought maybe not, because just because they're mean doesn't mean I'll be mean back.
I can't help feeling a little bit like they've just stolen that from Avid.
Meron. I may be ginger, but we all hate albinos, right?
Yeah, I think that's an Avid Meron by Selectar joke. Yeah. I think it's directly taken off there.
Well, what do you think? I mean, see, now I think I wouldn't mind being ginger. Nothing wrong with being ginger.
Would we?
What's better, gingerness, gingerism, or albinism?
Do you know, when I was at university, I had a friend who was very ginger, and we had an ongoing joke about being the ginger and the albino. And she once saw a copy of Albinism Life. What was it? What's it called? Albinism News, maybe? I don't know. Whatever the Albinism Fellowship newsletter was called at the time, or may still be called. And so she got a bit jealous. So I used to make her a Ginger Life newsletter.
Oh, isn't that nice?
I know, it's Ginger nice. Life. And she stuck them to her bedroom doors. Her bedroom door, rather. And it was very entertaining, yes.
Very intense. Did you have to be there, Sarah?
You maybe had to be there, but it was quite funny at the time. And she used to regularly play me that Bo Selector clip.
So what would you choose? Would you see now that if you're ginger, you can drive? Wins every time, doesn't it? Ginger, albinism, ginger, albinism, ginger.
Yeah, probably ginger.
You'd want to be ginger, wouldn't you? You can drive.
Yeah, ginger, because you can see.
You can do everything. You can do anything you like. These ginger people don't realise.
Who are ginger and have albinism. Because they exist, you know.
Ginger people with albinism. Albinism.
Like OCA2, they're kind of ginger.
Well, I think you might just be like, are you offending a whole group of people here? See, I like ginger. I think ginger.
What, and cool. You're saying you don't like OCA2s?
No, I'm not saying that. I don't like OCA1s.
Oh.
Don't like you, Sarah.
Don't like me. That's fair.
The White Noise Show. It just is.
Right, let's go live. It's not the news. It. We don't have a news. Let's go live to Twitter, right? Which actually is from somebody called Sarah. So Sarah is saying, more of an albino furry caterpillar, please. What?
An albino furry. Aren't all caterpillars kind of furry, albino or not?
Well, yeah, so it's a bit of tautology, furry caterpillar. I don't know. Are they? Yeah, they're all furry, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all a bit hairy.
I can't imagine albino caterpillar being nice, though.
It's making me want to Google it.
Oh, it's going to be hideous, isn't it? So, yeah. Next one. Oh, no, that's two. That's again, quite rude. Won't be rude. Oh, a baby albino turtle swimming amongst the green turtles. Oh, that turtle doesn't look good.
These albinism animal things still, isn't it? It's still just, you know, I want something different, Christina.
this turtle. Can I just tell you, there's a picture of this turtle, right? This turtle looks like a peeled, hard-boiled egg with legs.
So if we were turtles, we would look like peeled, hard-boiled eggs.
With legs. Oh, they're probably not legs, are they? They're flippers or something, aren't they? I don't know what they are. Evolutionized legs or something. Very legs. Strange. Not.
I'm going to call them that.
Not something I'd want. Last one of the moment is, to start with, this albino noun, or whatever should be stopped, is more like a racism remark.
Okay, that's a comment on the whole albinism thing.
Yeah, see, because if I type in albinism, you get a whole load of sensible people saying sensible things.
And that's no fun.
That's no fun. So you won't be doing that then, will we?
No.
So we are going to talk serious talk now. We are going to talk about the genetic implications of passing albinism, or indeed any kind of genetic condition, visual impairment or the like, on to your child. The reason Sarah and I were off from the White Noise Show for a few years is because we both got married and had children. I now have two, Sarah has one. And in our last show, I think we did, we were talking about I was saying that I had never considered having a child, that when I got pregnant, I would have a child with albinism. I think I said that I didn't mind. I didn't think about it. What were the chances? It's not going to happen. Sarah, what were you saying about, you were saying you would want to test.
I was saying that I would do PGD IVF. And I'd seriously consider that to sort of avoid passing it on, and very much passing it on was on my mind, as it were. So yeah, so what did we do? ...
Well, 3 years down the line, I had a little girl, you had a little boy.
Indeed. Yeah. I didn't do PGD IVF, and I didn't have a child with albinism.
I did get pregnant, have a child, and I randomly had a child with albinism.
So, it turned out all of our worries were misplaced, and we should have had each other's worries.
Exactly. So it was all quite bizarre. And listening to the other show back, it was all quite, everything happened that we thought wouldn't, really. When my daughter was born, and that is now 3 years ago, she popped out of me and she had white hair. And she looked, my sister is a midwife, and my sister was, I had a cesarean, and my sister was in theatre when she was born. And apparently she said to the consultant who she's friends with that did my cesarean, "Oh, I think she's got albinism." But then it was all dismissed away because babies can have really white blonde hair when they were born. And it just didn't sit right with me. And when my mum came, my mum said, "Oh, I think," because my mum can't ever say the word albinism, "I think she looks like you, Christina," which was a euphemism.
She's one of those.
Yeah, it was a euphemism for, "I think she's got albinism. She looks like you, Christina." And so there was a nagging feeling because she was so very blonde. And we, to cut a long story short, we got referred to Great Ormond Street. And by that point, she had got darker. And she does have albinism, but she has a very mild form of it. And her vision isn't really affected. And she's on the fortunate scale of albinism, where she's got very blonde, pretty hair, big blue eyes, but not really any of the eyesight problems that go with it. But she's one of these children whereby if I didn't have albinism, she probably
never would have been picked up.
She would have just been a sort of Aryan blonde child, very blonde.
And it's funny
child.
Because now she actually, when you look at her now, she's only slightly blonder than your son was at that age, isn't she?
Yes,
really,
she's really caught up in the
in the pigmentation state.
Yeah, it was very strange because it was something that I had never considered could happen, because the chances of it happening are very very slim. I think it's something like 1 in 80,000 or something. I don't know.
I think I was quoted 1 in 100,000.
Yeah,
I think that was roughly where.
But when I went to Great Ormond Street, they did admit that they don't know enough about the genetics of it all. But interestingly enough, having said before that I wasn't fussed, I hadn't even crossed my mind, because I had to have fertility treatment to get pregnant with both my children, all I cared about was getting pregnant. And so the thought of albinism didn't cross my mind because the odds were quite slim. The anxious wait between me thinking my daughter might have it and being diagnosed with it, it was turbulent. It was really turbulent, and it was quite emotional. And I remember having chats with you, Sarah, saying, "Oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And how?" And I was sending pictures to you, like going, "What do you think about this? And what do you think about that?" And I tell you what, I felt really awful. I felt awful. I was torn. I knew in reality that actually it wasn't a problem, because you know I've kind of done all right, and you know, but it was the guilt that I had, that I'd created somebody that I hadn't even thought about could have what I had and then did have it. It was the guilt that was eating me up. It was awful.
And it was amazing, wasn't it? Because it was such a turnaround, wasn't it? It was such a turnaround in thoughts and feelings. And I remember I'm trying to remember how old Poppy was when she got the formal diagnosis. And I was quite heavily pregnant with my son, I think, when she got her diagnosis. I have a feeling, or I was if not heavily pregnant. I remember sitting there with a bump when I heard
it. It was June, and you were
I was pretty pregnant. Yeah, and I remember I was with a work colleague, and you texted me from Great Ormond Street and said, "Oh, you know, we've had a diagnosis of albinism." And I remember sitting there and literally, it's quite embarrassing, I literally burst into tears in the middle of the car, and I just couldn't quite believe it, because even though we'd talked lots about it, hadn't we, and about whether she has it or whether she doesn't, and we'd sort of had, I think you'd and I think I'd sort of come to the thought probably she does have it, actually getting that official diagnosis, and she's not even my child, do you know what I mean? it was a real shock, wasn't it? And for me it was a shock, so for you it must have been a moment.
Because I think looking at it, was just coincidental, it was too coincidental that she was that blonde. But she wasn't having any of the eye things. She wasn't having she doesn't have a nystagmus, which, you know, is obviously a telltale sign. She was, when she was little, very light sensitive. She still is light sensitive now, but not, you know, not to a debilitating degree or anything. And she's got my skin. She, you know, she's totally got that. But it was, it was something I never even comprehended occurring. And actually when I got diagnosed, I did think of this podcast. Actually, I thought, that's so bizarre, because I just assumed that it wouldn't happen. And genetics is such a funny thing. And if I were to have another child, which I'm not going to, not for those reasons, just for many other reasons, I don't want another child, two are enough, I would think about it. I would think, you know what, albinism comes in varying degrees, and she's been very fortunate that she's, you know, on the one end of the scale. You and me are real on the other. If I had another child, where would that be?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good point, isn't it? I think, as discussed in the previous podcast, it was always on my mind. I didn't have PGD IVF, and we did just make the decision to try it naturally, mostly because we actually realised financially, when you sort of really looked into it financially, it was just something that wasn't an option for us at that time. And to start the procedure, just to even find out if my husband carried the gene, seemed slightly futile, when I probably knew it wouldn't change whether or not I would go on and have a child anyway. So we did that. And then obviously, as I said, it was on my mind, and it was even more on my mind once Christina's daughter had got her diagnosis. And even
when I had got the diagnosis for my daughter, did you think, oh my goodness, should we have done this genetic testing? Did you think, oh my goodness, what did you think about you and your child?
No, I didn't think we should have done the genetic testing. I think I was so pregnant by that point, I was already quite attached to the little person jumping around in my tummy. And so I think I maybe even started to find some acceptance in the idea there, if you see what I mean, because I don't know whether I'd already grown an attachment, and then I felt maybe it gives me time to get my head around the idea of it. And I think I'd almost sort of got to an accepting point of it, bizarrely, like a bit of a turnaround. Maybe it was just like pregnancy hormones making me feel all lovely and nice and stuff, so everything was going to be fine. But it must have been on my mind, because even without getting hugely graphic, when I was literally about to have my son, and the midwife turned around and went, "Ooh, lots of hair," and even when I was off my face on pethidine, I still managed to say, "What colour is it?"
The all-important question.
The all-important question, what colour is it? And my husband laughed. I remember my husband honestly like, laugh, it's not funny. My husband laughed and was just like, it's dark brown.
Well, I remember when I had my son, my first child, the first thing you said to me was, what colour's his hair? You're like my mum, a euphemism for, has he got albinism? And I had a section with him as well. Didn't even cross my mind.
It crossed my mind.
I know.
Obviously. And it's funny. And I felt relieved, because his hair was dark brown, which wasn't a massive surprise in terms of my husband's Asian. So he was always going to have fairly dark hair. If he didn't have albinism, he was always, you know, I knew that the child would have. But I was quite relieved in a way, because then when I sent photographs around to everybody,
there wasn't a question.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, wasn't in a question of it. There was no, and even actually my midwife had been quite strange in the lead up to the birth, to the point when they were going to make me have a hospital birth instead of a birthing centre birth, purely on the basis that the child might have albinism.
Which is ridiculous.
They thought was going to happen if the child had albinism. I have no idea.
I think they thought there was going to be some kind of like apocalypse.
I'm not sure.
And the skies were going to go black, and there was going to be lightning, and it was going to be like powder, and the hospital would explode, and they'd all turn electric and stuff.
I actually ended up putting a complaint in the end, and I put this complaint in, and I just said to the woman who was the lead midwife who was taking the complaint kind of thing, I just said, look, I said, what do you think you're going to do if the child does have albinism? I don't know. Do you want to immediately put a pair of glasses and slap sun cream on it? I don't think that's going to happen. Do you know what I mean? There is no immediate health issue.
No, what they wanted to do was they wanted to get all the consultants. They wanted to have optimum freak show moment where they could get all the ophthalmologists and they could wheel it round.
Wheel it round his little cart.
Freak child.
So it was just, and in many ways, I think I was so relieved that he had dark brown hair, just so that actually all of those questions and all of that kind of, I don't know, Ferrari that I thought was going to kind of come along for no particular reason, was just stopped right there and then, because he clearly didn't have albinism. There was no question he didn't have it. So in that many ways, that made it a lot easier for me.
And how do you feel about having because I'm not going to have any more children, how do you feel about having another child?
Well, it's funny because, you know, you saying, oh, my whole goal was just to have a child. So actually, because you were having fertility treatment, it kind of actually took away from other kind of concerns. Well, with, unfortunately for myself and my husband, unfortunately, you know, we've actually had two miscarriages between my son being born and trying to have another one. And actually, it's really interesting because that is there, and because that sort of hangs over our head as a, will we actually manage to have another one, which hopefully we will. There's, for me, funnily enough, that question has completely gone out of my mind as well. And I think that is just because I have a totally other worry about actually even managing to have one. Not because I don't worry about it, not because I've even had a child and they don't have it, because actually for me that means nothing in terms of what can still happen for as you well found it can happen with the second one. So yeah, but I think that's definitely not at the forefront of my mind anymore, and I suppose I feel quite selfish about that. But no, it definitely wouldn't stop me having another one, and I definitely wouldn't go back and look at genetic testing. And I wouldn't, I think, I don't know, I guess some people might turn around and say, well, you've got one child who doesn't have it, why have another? You know, why not just stick with the one who's healthy and well and everything else and stop kind of trying to have another one? But I don't, you know, I don't feel like that about it. And I weirdly think I've coming to a place where actually if the child did have albinism, I'm sure there would be that guilt there that we talked about. But I think I would have been far more accepting of it now. I'm not quite sure why. I don't quite know why that specific thing has changed. But
maybe it's maturity. Maybe it's because you have had problems, and maybe it's because you've seen that I have, and actually it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. And I think also, because I think in my head I came to realise that if we don't manage to have another child naturally, and it's something I've talked about for years, if we looked to make an addition to our family in another way, probably it would be about looking at adopting a child, and probably that would be about going out to India and adopting a child with albinism. So, and then I kind of think, well, if I'm willing to bring a child with albinism into my family that way, then is it so bad to have a child in my family?
But it's minus the guilt, though, isn't it?
It's that child's already
been born, and you're actually doing something quite amazing. Whereas it's that whole, as I found out, that whole, oh my goodness, I've knowingly created a person who
might have
problems in the same way that I have.
So yeah, it's been an interesting journey for us both, hasn't it? I think it's been a changing journey.
If you want to get in touch, email us at thewhitenoiseshow@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook or find us at Twitter @whitenoiseshow. Sarah, everybody, are you ready? It's quiz time.
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, it's a bit of a different quiz. It's semi-serious, semi-jokey. Okay. So we're going on the Mother's Day theme. I have some scenarios for you.
Okay.
You have to pick. There's no right answers. There's no wrong answers. Okay. So you are having your 12-week scan. What do you do? A. Pretend you can see it and coo in amazement at your baby on the screen. B. Admit you can't make anything out at all. C. Try and contort your body so you can see the screen. Or D. Ask them to play the heartbeat so you can at least enjoy something. Which one would you do?
I can tell you what I did.
Oh, what did you do?
I did. I admitted it. I admitted I couldn't see it. And she changed all the contrast and moved the screen closer to me.
And could you see it then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she went through it all step by step with me.
And did you get which was the head? Which was, yeah. Good for you. Okay. When baby is handed to you, one of the first things you do is A, smile in awe of your new child. B, check their eyes to see if they look okay. C, investigate hair colour. Or D, all of the above.
All of the above.
Of course it is.
I did it on the way out. I can't even say I even waited to hold them. That would be funny.
See, you'd be, right, this would be you. You'd be, investigate hair colour, check their eyes to see if they're okay. Lastly, smile in awe at your new baby.
Yeah, that was me. Beautiful moment.
Beautiful moment.
I was high as a kite. I didn't know what was going on.
Well, all you knew was you didn't want a white-haired child. Right. You are changing nappies for the first few times. Do you... A. Are you self-conscious because you have to get closer than most people whilst getting the hang of it? And do you do it in another room? B. Do it publicly and don't care. C. Always do it in private. Or D. You've never really thought about it.
I did think about it, actually. I did think about it. And I think it took me a lot longer to change nappies when I first did, because I was really worried about leaving any poo behind or anything like that. Sorry, listeners, a bit graphic. So I did. I think at that point I had lost all dignity of everything. I looked hideous.
I like the way you're using the past tense.
any woman that knows, regardless of albinism, knows that all dignity is gone at this point. So actually I just got on and did it wherever I was, because at that point, who cares?
See, but after about 3 months, you can like place your child anywhere and do it blind. You can like contort them in tiny places on trains, can't you?
Absolutely. And yeah,
you can be having your head turned to the other person you're talking to. Don't even need to look at your child's bottom.
No, it's true. You probably don't even have to be in the same room as them, and you'd still manage to change.
Mr. Tickle Arms might be involved.
Mr. Tickle Arms might be involved, but you'd still manage to do it. It's fine.
Okay. When your child first goes to nursery, A, do you tell the nursery people that you're visually impaired? B, just say it on a need-to-know basis? Or C, just agree when the key worker is commenting on what your child is doing at the other side of the room and you have no idea what they are talking about? Or D, always wait for your child to spot you before going in to find them?
I wait for my child to spot me before I go in to find them.
Have you ever been guilty of them saying, oh, look, he's just over there. Look, see, can you see he's just over there doing a little bit of painting? Oh, I think he's smiling.
Absolutely.
At you.
And it's not because they don't know I'm visually impaired either. Like, I didn't kind of march in and say, well, I'm a visually impaired mother the first time he went there at all. I just, in passing, in conversation, I kind of said, oh, I just don't see so well. And left it at that, and that's as far as that conversation has gone. But they never remember.
So they won't. But when you say it like that, it's a very casual, oh yeah, which is a very normal thing to say, isn't it? Yeah. You're not making a big statement. If I were to, I'd probably say something like that. But as we all know, the bluffingtonpost.blogspot.com, I could never admit to anything ever at all. So, you know, I'm the sightedest person when I pick up my children from school on nursery. No, actually, the school.
How many times have you taken the wrong child home?
Today I wish I did take the wrong child home, because I picked her up. She was hysterical, so frankly it would have been a joy. It would have been an utter joy.
That would be a good excuse, wouldn't it? I just got the wrong one that wasn't screaming their head off.
But no, I just mostly I just wait until she comes running going, mummy.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And then obviously you hope that you're the mummy that they're referring to, because otherwise it could get all a little bit embarrassing.
Yeah, I can imagine your upset child as you pick up another child and your child's going, but you're my mummy. Oh, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, exactly. Right, this one is, well, we're going to talk about it a bit in a minute, it's disclosing. A, do you tell your child from a young age you have terrible eyesight and so and do it in a drip, drip, drip way? B, do you never mention it? C, tell them when they can understand? Or D, feed bits to them as and when they need to?
Oh, I think I do it in a drip, drip, drip way, but I think I'm, and we'll talk about it a bit more in a bit, but I think I'm very conscious that it's not his burden.
So would you be doing A?
Yeah, I think A. Yeah.
Okay. You go to the zoo with your child. Do you? A, only go to the large animals you can see. B, go to everything and pretend you can see it all and exclaim about the crazy things little critters are getting up to. C, say mummy can't quite see that or read the sign either because it's stupidly far away and in tiny type. Or D, go with people that can see it all.
I probably would end up going with people that can see, so that'd be fine. But I would definitely be the parent that pretends they can see it all anyway.
Of course you would, because in last month's podcast you were talking about cats.
Yes, cats. Okay. Oh yes, darling, that's lovely. I perfected that one.
Everything's a cat.
Or everything's a cat.
Everything's
a cat.
Or everything's lovely.
It's just lovely. Lovely, darling. Ooh, yes, aeroplane. Lovely.
You see us standing there going, aeroplane, helicopter,
trying to hear something,
fly, what is it?
Ooh, who knows, terrible.
Making a noise though.
Terrible.
Last one,
birdies, mummy. Lovely, darling.
Birdies, oh, the trees are making nice noises.
Yeah.
What do you say when your child says, A, why is your hair so blonde? B, why do your eyes move all the time? C, why can't you drive?
Oh, so to A, oh God, yeah. I think I'd be honest, but it's really difficult with little ones to explain it, I think. My little boy's probably too young to even be able to articulate that, any of that into words. So he does ask me about a car. He goes, oh, mummy car, let's go to the car kind of thing. And also I know mummy doesn't drive a car. We go on the bus, don't we? Or we go in the pushchair kind of thing. And I kind of, I do make him aware that I don't drive kind of thing, but I think he's still really too young. He's only 2.5, so still too young really to get the idea of it or to comment on my hair or whatever. But my friend's 4-year-old commented on my hair the other day and said, why do you have white hair? And I said, oh, well, I think I said something about my body doesn't make colours. That's kind of my standard response to children. Or my body doesn't make colours very well. And she sort of thought
like some kind of My Little Pony.
Yes, really. And she thought about it for a while and she's like, and your eyes don't work very well. And I was like, no, my eyes don't work very well, do they? And she's like, okay. She said, a bit like Elsa, but her eyes work well, don't they? And I said, oh, yes, I think Elsa's eyes work well.
And she's pretty and she doesn't have albinism.
Do you have magical powers? No, I don't have magical powers. So it went on for a little while. And then in the end, what I did was someone I know through the Albinism Fellowship's daughter had done a video and her daughter's sort of a couple of years older than my friend's daughter. But I thought, oh, do you know, she sort of explains albinism on there. So I played her the video of the little girl talking about albinism. So that she understood, perhaps would help her understand a little bit more. And I think it did sort of help her a little bit. I think it was a useful thing to do. Maybe I'd do something like that with Sebastian when he asks, but maybe not.
Well, my little boy apparently said to my husband the other day, oh, why does mummy take tablets in the morning? I take tablets for something else. Why does mummy take tablets every morning? Does it make her eyes work better?
Aww.
Isn't that cute? But I was thinking, well, these tablets really aren't doing their job, are they? If I have to take them every morning, yeah. There's still no improvement. Sheesh, for the last 30-something years, these tablets, they're just not, you know.
My body doesn't make colours.
Right, Twitter time. Twitter time, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, right. Sad that I'll probably miss these at the official launch. And it's like albino animals. People are obsessed with albino animals. Oh, what's this? Dyed eyebrows are the best. even without makeup. Now I don't look like an albino rat.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, that's nice.
Nice. Well, I don't know if that is somebody with albinism. Bit of a dodgy makeup thing going on. So if that was you, thewhitenoise@gmail.com, and let me know, because really? Looks like a pale albino, strong-faced man to me.
Okay, in relation to...
In relation to I don't know what. Burnt Broccoli says, Iggy looks like a pale albino, strong-faced man. Please don't insult albinos like that. Yeah, don't insult albinos like that.
Who's Iggy?
He's somebody. Let me click into that and see if I can see who Iggy is. Iggy looks like a pale albino, strong-faced man. I don't know who Iggy is. I can't tell you.
Oh, I thought you meant you'd seen the picture and you agreed.
No.
Oh, no, he actually does.
No, it's clear. I don't know. Iggy. There's a couple of Iggy ones. There's that albino turtle, the hard-boiled egg one, with legs. Peeled hard-boiled egg. Not just like, because then it would be a brown thing that looks like an egg. It's not brown. It's white, hard-boiled, peeled egg. Lots of turtles. Lots of albino turtles. I can't get over the amount of albino turtles. It's making me feel a bit ill, actually. Some of our hogs have come out of hibernation, including Johnny the albino hog. Do you think that's after Johnny Winter? What do you reckon?
Maybe. It could be. Are we talking hedgehogs there? We're not talking pigs.
We're talking hedgehogs. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know you were hogs.
Well, could be a hog. I don't know. Do hogs actually...
I don't know.
Oh, here's this one from Brian Brido. To start with, this albino noun... Again, we've had that. Or whatever should be stopped is more... It's more like a racism remark.
Oh...
See, look. Right, what I should do, right, listeners, is I'm now going to type albinism, right? See what you get. So this one, that's albinism news. That's a sense of they're sensible people, nice people. Or here, look, violence against children with albinism in Tanzania, a serious and urgent issue. You see, so you actually get proper things, people talking about serious things, and you don't get stupid pictures of hard-boiled egg turtles, really. So, there we go. Right, Sarah, the last thing that we're going to talk about, everybody, is what did you think would be your biggest challenge being visually impaired when you had a child? Go.
I thought my biggest challenge was going to be getting out and about, and I actually thought I was going to have more trouble pushing a pushchair than I've had. I think that was my biggest worry. What was your biggest worry?
I think my biggest worry, which is anybody that listens to this show will think, gosh, she needs counselling. She needs serious help. It was the whole meeting new people and making friends. It's the same chestnut. It's like repeat play in my life. And then going to baby groups and spending lots of time talking to people with their babies, and then going to the same group the next week and not knowing who any of them are or who anybody's baby is, because let's face it, they all look the same, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
All the same little things, little shriveled up creatures. And that sadly was one of my biggest worries.
And did that come true?
And actually it did come true, but it's the story of my life, so you know, it's just I need to get a grip, I need to sort it out. And it did come true. And I think people do say visually impaired, albinism, normal anybody says that when you have children and you start going to groups, it's a little bit like going back to school and making friends again, because everybody's going to these groups for the sole purpose of making friends. And it is a bit like doing like sort of Freshers' Fair or something.
Yeah,
isn't
Freshers'
it?
Week, yeah.
Freshers' Week, yeah.
Where are you from? What A-levels did you do? What are you studying? Yeah, except it's... How old's your baby? Are they a boy or a girl? Did you have a cesarean or a natural birth? Yeah.
And I do think, we've had this conversation as well, that actually people do judge you as well, don't they? I think there is a lot of kind of And I'm guilty of it. Oh, do I think I could be friends with you? You know, it starts off from basic things like you look at the child, you look at the mum, you look at what they're wearing, you look at the kind of pushchair that they've got as well, don't you?
Because
people,
yeah,
you know, awful. People judge you when you pushchair. You kind of sussing them out, thinking, oh, you know, prospecting them, aren't you? Could I be friends with you? Couldn't I be? And equally, but I don't. Clearly not as discerning as many people, but I think people obviously have done it with me and deduced that maybe I don't want to be friends with her.
I think I found the whole process awful, and yes, obviously some of that was to do with being visually impaired, some of that was to do with where I live, I think, and I actually came to the conclusion in the end that I basically didn't do it. I basically opted out of baby groups totally and decided that at the time my son was too young to be getting anything from it. Decided that I wasn't really making friends, and I most of that was to do with the fact I was meeting people, I was having inane conversations about sleeping and feeding and nappies and things that I just had no interest in having a conversation about despite having a young child, and decided I would rather be spending time with friends I already had. Children or no children. So yes, I think it was to do with being visually impaired, and it was to do with obviously looking a bit different, and people probably were judging me, but I think I just very quickly came to a point where I thought, you know, mummy land is really not where I'm at.
Yeah, I think certain people like it and certain people don't, and I really wanted to like it and I really wanted to be in it, but it brought back all my insecurities. It really did. It's such a bizarre thing. I think, you know, you're all hormonal anyway, having had children and stuff, and I think you sort of become more vulnerable as well because you're looking out for your children. You're in like protect mode and kind of defense mode and everything else, aren't you? And but it brought back all the kind of, it was a little bit like, you know, and I'd got over all of this stuff, it was a little bit like going to school. And I did slightly get obsessed with people looking at my eyes and thinking, what's the matter with her eyes? I really like, you know, doing that whole kind of really trying to avoid looking people in the eye, because I sort of, pardon the pun, got a little bit fixated with it.
I do think making friends in adulthood is hard for any adult in many ways, to make a friend that's more than just a casual, oh, hi, how are you? Yeah. Thing, small talk kind of person, I think is difficult in adulthood, you know, just from friends who don't have albinism, say it. But then I think you add in the fact that there is something that makes you stand out. And unfortunately, even in adult society, people are still very much wanting to fit in, aren't they? And very much in mummy circles, where definitely, probably a lot of it is about kind of for show, or you're walking along with your bugaboo pushchair and you're frugie dressed baby and you're, you know, kind of using reusable nappies or whatever, all of that kind of stuff is hard enough regardless, and then actually then you make friends with the woman in the group who's a bit different. Maybe that's a step too far.
Yeah, that's taking it all too far.
Yeah, it's taking it all too far.
But what I did realize is that, looking back now, 3 years down the line for one of them and, you know, 7 years for the other, well, I guess 7 years of parenting, I look back and I think, actually, do you know what? The things that are hard are not being able to drive, that, you know, like living in London, I didn't ever think about not driving, not once. And with a child in London, I never thought about it, never thought it was a disadvantage. We moved out of London to get a bigger house, and since then it's been a drip 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 thing, and the not driving and having children is really eating away at me. It's really bothering me. It's making me feel quite inadequate, and it stresses me out that my children can't do all the things they want to do because we don't have the public transport network that there is in the city, to the extent that we're actually thinking about moving back to London for those very reasons, so that our children can, yes, they will have a tiny house, but you know,
You can leave that house and do something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't put a price on having a children. It's about building memories, and I do worry that we're not building, because I look back on my childhood and there's, you know, countless millions of memories, and I worry that my children aren't getting, of course, that, you know, my children, just for the record, don't sit here, my son is at clubs the whole time, but as a family, but the other thing, and the social thing, that was the other thing that we've discussed, but apart from that, I actually think parenting is just generally really blinking hard.
Absolutely.
And actually, there isn't that much difference between being a visually impaired mother. Well, I'm talking about, you know, our level of sight and better. Yeah, you know, being a blind parent.
Being partially sighted.
Yeah, exactly. You know, being able to bluff it like we do. So I just plug that blog again, the bluffingtonpost.blogspot.com. I don't think really it's that much different than anybody else. Off the back of it, we were going to talk about quickly, would you change the way you look for the sake of your child, and would you talk about being, would you admit that you were visually impaired to your child, or would you just try and, you know, bluff it?
I would always admit that I'm visually impaired to him. I have no intention of hiding that. I feel no need to hide that from him. And like I said, for me, it's very much a drip approach where, you know, I'll say, oh, mum, we can't see that. And I don't do it for everything. And I don't do it all the time. Like I said, I do that. Oh, that's lovely, darling, kind of things. Because I don't think he should feel it as a constant thing. He shouldn't feel it as a burden. He shouldn't feel it as a constant pressure.
But also children point things out just because they do, because they're learning about the world, aren't they?
That's it. And I don't think he needs me to go, well, mummy can't see it all the time. So the only time I really do it is if he's asking me a question and I can't give him an answer. I genuinely can't give him an answer. And then I will say, well, mummy can't see that. You have to ask daddy, or, you know, and I think then that's important. I have no issue with that, really, that he'll know and grow up and know. The hiding my appearance thing I find really difficult, because I dropped my friend's daughter off at school the other morning and all the kids were staring at me, and I was really aware of it, because I think it was on my mind before we dropped them off, and I thought, well, how will it be in a playground, kind of thing. Even though I work with children in schools all the time anyway, strangely, I don't know, hadn't particularly worried me before. So in the playground, and all the kids were staring, and I felt very conscious of that. And I thought, gosh, would I change my appearance to make his life potentially easier? But I still feel in my heart of hearts I won't, because I think that's sending out entirely the wrong message to him, that you have to change yourself to be acceptable to society. And I hate that.
Before you went to the school, had it crossed your mind that children might stare at you?
Yeah, it had. And I think that's why myself up.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think they actually were?
I think they were, yeah.
Do you think that you were being paranoid about it?
No, I think they were. I think there's no doubt that they were. But I think I just... they were.
But could it be because you were a new face around, you know, like
it could be, and if you were that same face every morning and every afternoon, then suddenly you're just,
because when my son goes to a village school quite far away, and my friend takes him because I can't get him there, but when I do go to events, which I do as often as when they occur and stuff, I don't do the school run every day, but if something's at school, I go. Never. I mean, I'm possibly got the odd little, but I've never really noticed anybody paying any undue attention to me. And when my son went to a different school and I used to do the school run every day, again, no, I don't think so.
So maybe I did create that in my mind a bit. I did feel very much so that kids were looking, going, ooh. And I think me changing my appearance doesn't help him.
I think it's
that.
Very confusing as well, because when do you stop as well? We've talked about it on previous shows. When do you stop? You know, you start changing how you look. At what point do you stop? At what point do you go back? Can you go back?
I would love for somebody to write in or to come on the show or whatever, without fearing criticism or anything, who has made those changes to their appearance, to feel as though they to make themselves feel better. I would love to speak to somebody about that. I would love for somebody to come and join us and talk a little bit about it, because obviously, like we've said before, it's a really personal choice.
We're not here judging.
We're not here to judge anyone or to say, oh, you know, that's right.
Hell, how can we judge anyone?
I was going to say, seriously, if you look at us. But I would just be really interested, because I think it's such a controversial issue, isn't it?
Well, we'll put it out there. So if anybody listening, if you dye your hair, if you are really into makeup, and you want to talk about it, and you want to talk about why, and while you're there, maybe you can give us some makeup tips as well. That would also go down quite well. Yeah. And recommend some good foundations and stuff. We'd like that. We would really welcome you to join us on our show. So you can find us on Twitter at White Noise Show, or you can go to the website thewhitenoiseshow.com, or you can tweet me personally at Christina, Kristina Venning, Venning, all one word, or get in touch with me on my blog, thebluffingtonpost.blogspot.com, or find us on Facebook, like us on Facebook. But do get in touch if you are somebody that changes your appearance. It would be great to find out why you do it, how you feel about it, whether you'll always do it, and it would be great to chat. I think that concludes our Mothering Sunday show. So I hope all you mothers out there have a lovely Mother's Day, and we will be back with you soon. So it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye. And goodbye from me.
Bye.